I have to say I'm impressed that this many people would come back knowing that I was going to preach on money. Lots of churches, in fact, most churches that I know are struggling with Sunday night attendance, so much so that many have just discontinued it, and others have made other arrangements to try to encourage it, but here at Woodland Oaks, I know why it is. It's really not because of the money sermon. It's because of the singing on Sunday nights better than it is any other time, right? It's incredible singing. So we are, you didn't have to say amen right at that time. But I'll consider the source because I knew who it was. I told the Thursday class that I know that my grandchildren get too much airtime because I'm the preacher. But I have to say just one more, and I'll try not to for a while. This afternoon, we spent watching our grandson in the 8th grade All-American Bowl football game and in San Antonio. And so, and by the way, they won a 31-0 shutout. So we had a good afternoon. As in everything in life, we must choose between the philosophy that the world teaches us and the teachings of the Bible. And that's not just talk. Everything that we're taught, we have to look at in God's Word and see what the Lord has to say about it. And it's always different than what the world has to say. And we make a choice. And it's about, this certainly includes what the world teaches and what the Bible teaches about money. They're worlds apart. And we talked this morning, we introduced this series this morning, and I mentioned two startling principles which demonstrate how different the world is from what the Bible teaches, and I would say how wrong and how far off the world is. The first one that Jesus said was, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And that is directly contradictory to what the world teaches. And I'm not going to say anything, well, I guess I am, about if you have an iPhone 4, then you have to have an iPhone 5 whenever they come out, right? And I have to laugh about that because that's not one of my weaknesses. There are some others. But we have to have all of the newest and latest and the best. And we do need to be reminded, and I don't mean to just pick on people who have an iPhone 5, but we do need to be reminded that possessions don't bring happiness. I don't care how many you have. And to live our lives as if when we can just get the new house or the new car or the new whatever it is that we've got our sights set on, that we think we're going to be happy, then it's not going to work. And we could surely spend our time a lot more productively if we wouldn't fall for that philosophy that the world teaches us. And it's one of Satan's strongest ploys to get people to start their life in a direction. And once we assume that if we just get more things and accumulate more things and better things and more toys, then our life is going to be better. Once he gets us to assume that, then he can leave us alone and go on to somebody else because he's got us. Because that's where we're going to focus our life. And it's going to be all about making money and accumulating money and gaining the things that money can buy. And so that's one of the statements that Jesus made. One of the principles is that a man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of his possessions. Can you imagine what your life would be like if you learned that really early on and you practiced that? You built your life around that principle your whole life? Can you imagine what your life would be like? It would certainly be different from others in the world, wouldn't it? And then the second principle that we looked at this morning that makes a radical change in our life is the realization that our money, what I call my money, is not my money. It's God's. And I, as I think about and as I thought about and was planning these lessons, then I thought about Gary and Kay Tannehill. They've been teaching lessons on money management for a long, long time. And it's pretty much consistently available through this congregation. And I happen to know some couples who have taken that course, and it's radically changed your life for the better. And so on behalf of the congregation, I would like to thank the Tannehills and those who work with them. They're not the only ones, but they've consistently stayed with it and been the impetus behind it. To have that material available and to be so consistent in that ministry, because it has dramatically affected lots of lives of people here in this congregation. And I commend that class to you, by the way. If you need to take it, whether you know that you need to take it or not. So quite often, once we know we need to take it, then we're in pretty dire straits. So I commend that class to you and commend them for their consistency in that class. But if we could learn those two principles, that our life isn't improved greatly, it doesn't consist of the possessions that we have, and that our money is not our own, then we have the kind of foundation that the Lord wants us to have so that we can build the right attitude about money and possessions and things of this world. He told his disciples, and we mentioned this morning at the beginning of Luke chapter 12, the story about the rich farmer. He said, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And it would really be interesting to make a study of how many, you know, what are different kinds of greed. I think that if we were to look at those three illustrations we used this morning, the rich fool, the rich man and Lazarus, and the rich young ruler, we would probably see three different kinds of greed there. But all of those were associated with some kind of greed and wrong attitudes about money. And then we began to look at, to lay the groundwork for Luke chapter 16, the parable of the shrewd manager, or the steward. And we began to look at some terminology associated with that so that we could understand what I believe, what is, at least to me, a kind of a mystifying parable that Jesus told. It's one of those that we avoid, and we try to talk about, you know, to avoid or to explain the problems that are associated with it. And we looked at the word steward or manager, and our next word that I want us to look at is the word, it's the King James word, unrighteous mammon. But it's actually not the King James word. If you'll look, I'm in Luke chapter 16, in verse 9 and verse 11. This is one of the places that the New International did a really poor job of translating, because they translated into something that's practical. They call it, in verse 9 and verse 11, they translate it as worldly wealth. Well, he is talking about that, but because the wording is changed, then I think we lose some of the impact of what he's saying. Here Jesus used this very uncharacteristically, not a Greek word and not a Hebrew word, but he uses an Aramaic word, the word mammon. And a translation, the word actually means that which someone puts their trust in. And it is most often used of money, but not exclusively. The word itself doesn't mean money. It means whatever somebody puts their trust in. And it's an Aramaic word. And it's really pretty interesting, I think, that he would use that word, because the Jews of his day were intimately familiar with the Hebrew and certainly Greek and Aramaic. And the Aramaic language, had he chosen to use the Hebrew word, would have made it pretty narrow. The Aramaic word was much broader, or I should say, to a much broader audience. They would have understood it. It's most commonly used, as I said, to refer to riches or money, as it is in this text. But the Jews of Jesus' day were familiar with that. And I think that that's one point to draw from this terminology, that he used a word that had a much broader meaning and appeal to a broader audience than normally he would have, but I think there's another reason. Why did he call it unrighteous mammon, or mammon of unrighteousness, as he did? You see why I say the NIV is a pretty weak translation there when it says worldly riches? That doesn't really translate the concept of unrighteousness or mammon, either one of those. And it's a much more intense word than just worldly riches. And I believe that he used this term because the desire for it, the love for it, the trusting in it, the misuse of it, is the source of majority of evil in this world. It's all about money, isn't it? You can follow the money trail. Whenever there's a problem, you can follow the money trail. And Paul will write to the young preacher, Timothy, and say, people who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap, and in the many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people, speaking of Christians, by the way, eager for money have wandered from the faith. People outside of Christianity haven't wandered from the faith, have they? So I know he's talking about Christians. And so he says, some people, Christians, eager for money, have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And I would make a suggestion to you. I used to, when I was young, I thought that the only people that had problems with money were people who had a lot of money. But that's not true. Money gives people problems whether you have it or whether you don't have it. It can give people who have a lot of money problems, and it can give people who have very little money problems. And he says here, people who want to get rich fall into a temptation and a trap of the devil. It's not just those who are rich, but those who have a desire to be rich. Now, I want to make it plain in this series of lessons at different times. I'll try to make sure that I touch this base, because I don't want this just to be negative teaching. Let's understand that having money and being rich is not a sin. It is, in fact, a blessing from God, something that God blesses man with. But it leads to unrighteousness when we lose sight of the fact that it belongs to someone else, and we start using it as if it's mine. That's when we get in trouble. And we deal God out of how we use our money, and in light of our recent study, we are guilty, at least we have been, some of us in the past, of having my money and God's money. And hopefully we're in the process of getting beyond that. There is no such thing as your money and God's money. It's all God's money. And when we put all of that, and this is just another way how these things, these teachings dovetail together. And so Jesus uses one of the terminologies, one of the terms that I want you to be aware of is this unrighteous mammon, that which leads to unrighteousness, that which we trust in, put our trust in, that leads to unrighteousness. And then Jesus' next reference to money and terminology associated with it is to contrast it in verse 11 to true riches. In verse 11 he says, so if you've not been faithful, literally, or trustworthy in handling unrighteous mammon, who will trust you with true riches? And he makes the contrast, and it's obvious he uses this to make a contrast, that finances, money, riches of this world, unrighteous mammon, is not true riches. It's not the kind of riches that he wants us to really be concerned about. It's a comparative word. It normally means contrasting that which is an imitation versus that which is real. And so just the fact that he put that in there tells us that that's not really true riches whenever you're able to accumulate vast amounts of money or vast amounts of good. I did a little research and found out, at least generically, that if all the gold in the world were melted down into a solid cube, then it would be about the size of an 8-room house. And I don't know how many billions or trillions or gazillions of dollars it would be worth. I didn't try to figure that out. But if a man had possession of every ounce of that gold, it couldn't buy him one friend. It could not buy him character. It could not buy him peace of mind. It could not buy him a clear conscience or a sense of eternity. It can't touch those things. And so it cannot be what we build our lives around. It must not be. Money will buy a bed, but not sleep. Books, but not brains. Food, but not an appetite. Finery, but not beauty. A house, but not a home. It will buy medicine, but not health. Luxuries, but not culture. Amusements, but not happiness. Religion, but not salvation. A passport to everywhere, but where? Heaven. Only God can give true riches. And he said, if I can't trust you with money, then what makes you think I'm going to give you true riches? Now stop and think about that. God only can give true riches, and he will only do that for those who demonstrate their faithfulness in managing money. Is that a fair conclusion to what he just said? If you can't take care of this physical thing that he's given to you as a good steward, then he says, I'm not going to give you the real stuff. I'm not going to give you true riches. It's possible for money to become your master. Money can become your master, I think, in one of three ways. Some people live to make money. Some people live to spend money. And some people live to save money. And all three of those, money becomes your master. That's what you live for, to make it, to spend it, or to save it. And it's really interesting that you can have it, that you can have such difficulties in such a wide variety of ways, isn't it? I really do think that it's not totally unfair to say, you know, lots of folks that came through really difficult times of the Depression, then they know what it is to save money. But I'm afraid that we can go to an extreme there to the point that we end up that becomes our obsession, just saving money and not spending money in any way. P.T. Barnum said, money is a terrible master, but an excellent servant. Not a bad line. John Wendell and his sisters were some of the most miserly people of all times. Although they had received a huge inheritance from their parents, they spent very little of it and did everything within their power to keep all their wealth for themselves. John was able to influence five of his six sisters to never marry. They lived in the same house in New York City for 50 years. When the last sister died in 1931, this is $1931 dollars, her estate was valued at more than $100 million. Her only dress was one that she had made herself, and she had worn it for 25 years. The Wendells had such compulsion to hold on to their possessions that they lived like paupers. And even worse, they were like the kind of person that Jesus referred to, who lays up treasures for himself but is not rich toward God, in Luke chapter 12, verse 21. And so it is possible to squander, foolishly squander your money, like the young man in the story of the prodigal. But it's also a serious problem to get to the point that we just hoard all of it for ourselves. You cannot serve both God and money. It's not possible. The world has a definite attitude about money. It's expressed in lots of different ways. Bumper stickers say, money isn't everything, but it ranks right up there with oxygen. Anyone who says money can't buy happiness just doesn't know where to shop. The lack of money is the root of all evil. That's a few bumper stickers. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, money often costs too much. In order to be successful at having and using money without it taking our soul, we must listen to Jesus and develop the proper attitude regarding its purpose and its use. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to God. Jesus referred to it as mammon because so many people look to it for their security. He refers to it as unrighteous because wanting it, loving it, trusting it, misusing it leads us away from God. It is not genuine riches because it cannot buy peace, security, happiness, or salvation. And it can become your master. And I know that nobody likes to be told how to spend our money. But Jesus said, if you want to go to heaven, listen to me. Not just about money, but about money also. And change our attitude. One of the things that we will learn in upcoming lessons is, and we already know it, and we know all of this, we're just being reminded. God doesn't need money. In fact, one day, he's going to pile everything up in a big pile and thump a match to it, and we're going to watch it all burn. That's going to be the value of all the money, all the gold, every material thing on the face of this earth. God doesn't need money. And so this series of lessons is not about me trying to even inspire you to give more. This series of lessons is about us studying together what is to be our attitude about money, how God wants us to feel about money, how he wants us to use money. And when we get the proper attitude about it, that'll take care of what we do with it. We'll do the right things. And then when we learn to do that, God is going to trust us with things far beyond material things. That's the reason. That's the goal of this series of lessons. And if tonight there's a need that you have in your life that can be met with a public response, this is your opportunity. Won't you come while we stand and sing?
There is a habit.